Welcome back. Let's start. So this is the last section of the lecture course, and we are chapter 5, and it's about generalized symmetries. And what's called the symmetry T of T nowadays. So what I'm trying to do is just give you a more pedestrian explanation of a paper by Fried, Moore, and Telemann. And the paper is called Topological Symmetries in Quantum Field Theory. And I try to connect it to things we have seen so far, so in particular to like so-called Dyagraph-Witten theories and symmetries T of T. But some of the questions they try to address is, what are finite symmetry structures in a general quantum field theory, and what are good ways of describing them? So a field, somehow with group, the advantage is there's like an abstract symmetry structure, which is a group, and then there are concrete realizations of those in certain systems, and everything you can argue abstractly will hold in any realization. So there's this distinction between abstract symmetries and concrete realizations. But in the setting of generalized symmetries, this is a bit harder to do, right? There it's harder to separate the symmetries from the actual system. And the symmetry T of T is one way of making a proposed definition for what the abstract symmetry structure is. So there is something like a symmetry T of T describing the symmetry, which you should think of as something as like a group. And then all arguments you can make in this topological field theory will hold in any quantum field theory which has this symmetry described by this field theory. But I should also say these lectures are going to be more sketchy and less formal than what we did so far. So a lot of things will just be statements, and there will be no proofs, and maybe sometimes even no definitions, and also many things at the moment don't have detailed proofs. But the first thing I just want to briefly mention is, how to think about quantum field theories, or at least how in this setting we will think about quantum field theories. And we think of them as similar to a topological field theory, but in addition we allow non-topological, dependent on non-topological structures. So for Q of T, we fix some non-topological or maybe non-topological background fields. Which we call F. And this is a collection of just fields, and usual examples for this would be something like a Riemannian or Lorentzian metric, an orientation, some background gauge fields, spin structures, something like that. And then a general quantum field theory we think of as a functor from a Bordism category. Now, for Bordisms which are equipped with these background fields, and then to a category of certain topological vector spaces which are now allowed to be infinite dimensional. And so the objects in here are again n minus one dimensional manifolds, but now they're equipped with the geometric structure F. And Bordisms are amorphisms are still Bordisms equipped with the same geometric structure. And I want to highlight that it's hard to actually make this into a proper definition. For example, these, like if F contains something like a metric, you want everything to smoothly depend on the metric, then there's a lot of technicality related to like infinite dimensional vector spaces and so on. But roughly speaking, this is how we think about a field theory. So there will be some Hilbert space or a state space associated to n-dimensional manifolds, and then there will be some time evolutions to Bordisms. And as an example, we will look at 1D quantum mechanics, and we look at the Wick rotated version. So 1D Wick rotated quantum mechanics. So what does this depend on? So first of all, here n is equal to 1. So quantum mechanics is like a 0 plus 1D quantum field theory. And the structures this depends on will be just a Riemannian metric. So some Riemannian metric on our manifolds and an orientation. So there's this Bordism category is nearly the topological Bordism category, but now every one manifold also is equipped with a metric. And this, in particular, gets rid of the finiteness condition we have seen before, because there we had like these type of relations that this is the identity, but now all these things will have length. So this will have some length t, and then this will not necessarily be the identity. And then what quantum mechanics as so these type of functors are usually called functorial field theories, and what quantum mechanics assigns to a point is just the Hilbert space of the system, and then to an interval which goes from 0 to t, just equipped with its standard metric. It will assign the operator e to the minus t h divided by h bar. And this is because we work in a equivocated theory, otherwise there would be some I for the time evolution operator. Then you can ask what it assigns to the negatively oriented point. So we have seen it should be something like the dual. For Hilbert space, the dual can be identified with the complex conjugate. And then the linear map corresponding to this Bordism will just be the complex conjugate of the original map. And then one other thing one can consider is the value on a circle of length t again. And this will then be the trace of this time evolution operator e to the minus th divided by h bar. So in particular, this needs to be trace class. Okay. And yeah. Now we want to try to understand what is the symmetry in a quantum mechanical system. So I mean, something we have seen before is whatever symmetries mean, it should be like a map from BG, so this category with one object and G as its automorphisms, to the category of things we consider, so two functors from one into topological vector spaces over C. And then we want these to also be unitary or reflection positive. This is essentially that these things are Hilbert spaces. And it fixes certain, just you should think of this as the condition as certain things being unitary. And then such a map is the same as giving a map U, which goes from the group G to the unitary operators acting on H, which in addition has the property that rho of G commutes with the Hamiltonian. Okay. And so this is what you would usually think of the symmetry in a quantum mechanical system. It's a unitary representation of your symmetry group on your Hilbert space, which has the property that it commutes with the Hamiltonian. Okay. Questions so far?
What is
RP? It means reflection positive. I just want things to be unitary, essentially. Right, I mean, here I want to map to unitary automorphisms and not arbitrary automorphisms. So it's not a big deal. Not going to be important in what follows. Okay, and now let us just reinterpret the whole thing in terms of an inclusion of defects. So if I look at this line I had up there, 0t, Now I can also consider configurations where there are certain operators or point defects inserted, which correspond to the symmetry element G. And then the condition, or this is again this E minus T H by H bar. And then in addition, we add rho of G. And this operator has the property that it's topological, meaning wherever I insert it, the partition, this value doesn't change. And the reason for it is that that it commutes with the Hamiltonian. So you should think of this as like time evolution up to this point, applying rho of G and then doing further time evolution. But since these two things commute, it doesn't matter where I insert this element. And then I can.
Sorry, I understand that I don't understand. G is a category, was like a point and morphisms are.
Yes.
And it maps into functors.
Yeah, so the condition here is also that it sends the point to this quantum mechanical system.
So it sends point into these.
Yeah.
And then all morphisms should act from itself, so it's natural transformation.
Exactly. And then the natural transformation in particular map from H to H, which commutes with these things.
Yes.
And then this induces these type of maps by taking like a certain limit of T going to zero. And you need to make sure that everything is smooth in an appropriate sense, which I'm not going to.
Also, when you mentioned reflection positivity, that's usually a property I ascribe to correlation functions. How would it instantiate in this case?
I mean, essentially it means that this is a Hilbert space.
Yeah.
And if you reverse the orientation, which also reverses the direction, this is given by taking the adjoint of a map, and then here it enforces things to be unitary, right? It's not important, it's just so that we get the usual picture, which is unitarity. And the other thing is, so let's just record the group here. And then I can also look now at pictures where I insert two group elements. So I insert some G here and some H here. And since they are topological, I can bring them close to each other, and then this is the same as inserting the product. And I think it's in this order. GH. And what this just means is that this map is actually a map of groups, so it forms a proper representation. And then we can also insert these type of operators in partition functions. So I can look at a circle, which has some G inserted. And then, so what this does, it just takes, again, the trace. And then it's E to the minus T H bar. And then it inserts rho of G into this partition function. This has the formal property that it's invariant under conjugation. I mean, you can see it from the cyclicity of the trace, but you can also see it graphically. So I can do this. And now I insert some H and H inverse. So there you just fuse to the trivial theory. And then I can take this inverse and move it around. So I get, this is the same of as the G conjugated with H. And why is this interesting? The interesting thing about this is that group elements up to conjugations, these are exactly G bundles on a circle. And group elements on an interval are G bundles on a line, which are trivial on the boundaries. So actually having this system with symmetry, we can also think of it as being a field theory defined in the background of defined in the presence of gauge fields for the symmetry. So we can actually think of the quantum mechanics with G as a functor from a now one-dimensional Bordism category, which in addition is equipped with principal G bundles for the symmetry G, and then it goes to topological vector spaces. And this should be common, or should look familiar for you. Usually if there's a symmetry, you can study your theory in the presence of background fields for the symmetry. So if there's the symmetry, you can define this functor. And then, just as an aside, which we will, might come back to later, an anomaly this is on the level of representations. It means that it's not exactly a representation, but there's a failure up to some phase depending on G and H. And this also means that somehow we cannot couple consistently to G background fields. This is just an aside. That an anomaly somehow in this setting just means that the representation is projective. Okay. And now more generally, if I have if I have some Q of T in any dimension, then I and a symmetry, then I can look at the cylinder and I can insert a co-dimension one surface labeled by G, and this is always the time evolution operator for now the Hamiltonian of the quantum field theory, and then we insert rho of G. So as soon as there's a symmetry, I can build these co-dimension one operators at least on these type of cylinders or insertion like this. And the operator really just inserts, the defect just inserts this operator.
Sorry, does H depend on sigma?
Yes.
So it's basically to each like sigma times a line we associate.
Yeah. I mean, you will, to each sigma times a line, you will associate this type of thing. But I mean, already the Hilbert space will depend on sigma, so H also needs to depend on sigma. And so what I think this, or what I hope what this motivates is that somehow symmetries seem to be related at least to certain operators or defects one can insert. And I, so that's the general theme somehow which has emerged over the last few years, probably more than that, but there's like a general theme that there's a connection between these two things. So I just let me briefly say how we think about defects in a Q of T. I mean, so far our quantum field theory was something we could evaluate on closed manifolds to get numbers and then on Bordisms to get linear maps. And now what defects do is that they also allow us to include certain stratifications with different objects. So we could look at something. Maybe like this. And then there might be some other thing which just goes from here and end there. So there's some type of stratification, and additionally, you might even allow different types of field theories on different regions of the space-time, and then a field theory with defects is somehow a rule which allows you to consistently assign partition functions to these type of configurations. And so these type of things, they will also carry labels. So I call these things, this is like a delta 1, delta 2, 3 and so on, and then these things. Also, the point defects are allowed to carry labels, so all these things carry specified labels, and the whole thing will depend on all the labels. Okay, that might be a bit abstract, but you know many examples of defects, so just some examples. So the most common one, or one which at least shows up often, are so-called Wilson lines. So these are present in any gauge theory, and essentially it's the expectation value of the holonomy along a specified line gamma. And then the support of the defect would be this line gamma. Okay. The other thing you can do is what's usually called Terhoeft lines. And these are lines you insert into your theory where your field have prescribed singularities. So for example, you might look at gauge fields which along around this line, the holonomy lies in the center of G. Or something like, or it's a specific element in the center, or you might specify some other type of singularity along these lines. And then what will be important for us is boundary conditions. So boundary condition, you can also think of as a codimension one defect between your quantum field theory and the trivial theory.
Is the difference serious? Because I can have like natural transformation between different factors.
You can have natural transformations between different, yes. But
yeah, I mean, in this story, I had like from Z quantum mechanics to itself.
Yeah.
But instead, I can.
But instead, you can think of inserting these type of defects. I mean, in the setting of TFTs, we've seen that all the natural transformations need to be isomorphic. And this will not, isomorphisms, not isomorphic. So every natural transformation automatically is invertible. Defects don't need to be invertible. So it might be, it's somehow a better way of studying relations between field theories, which do not force invertibility on us. Okay. And then you just sketch how this fits into this functorial setting. So there one now defines a field theory which is allowed to have defects and generally corresponds to a QFT to be a functor now from a Bordism category, still depending on these background fields F. But in addition, it has defects. So it has these type of stratifications and labels. And then we map from there to topological vector spaces. So typical Bordism in here might look like, this, and then there. Things like that. So there's some stratification, and then there might be some regions which have different labels. And then to something like this, I want to assign a linear map from whatever is assigned to the ingoing circle, whatever is assigned to the ingoing circle to whatever is assigned to the outgoing circles. This is somehow a rough sketch on how to include defects. And now for us, the most important type of defects are so-called topological defects. So definition, a defect is topological it's topological if I can deform the defect slightly and the value of any correlation function or any other thing doesn't depend on this. So as an equation, it means something like if I have a defect like this, and it's the same as looking at this deformed, as long as it doesn't cross any other operators or insertions. And this type of equation we want to hold somehow when evaluated in correlation functions or partition functions or when evaluated on these Bordisms. So I want to allow to deform these defects. And then we have already seen that the defects corresponding to symmetries, they are topological because I can deform them. Okay, and then another example of, I think this still fits here. So one example is, we fix some field theory that Z QFT be a field theory with U1 symmetry. And for the moment, I might think of this as something classical described by Lagrangian, which has some U1 symmetry. And then there's a corresponding neutral current. So there's some current corresponding to the symmetry, which you might think of as a one form. And then there's also some corresponding charge to that, to the symmetry by Noether's theorem, which is like an integral over R n minus 1 of the Hodge star of J. And that this is topological, you can just see by using Stokes. So if I integrate over something like this, star J, then this is the same. I want to do D star J. So on the one hand, this is star J on the one boundary minus the other one. But because it's a conserved current, this is zero. So this integral is zero, meaning that the charge Q is conserved. But now, somehow in this formula, nothing restricts me to insert this along a time slice. So I can just insert the current on other manifolds. So I can just consider operators which are integrals over closed n minus one dimensional manifolds of star J. One, and this is always a topological operator. And it's somehow an infinitesimal version of the symmetry. So we can also look at its exponential. We can look at 2 pi I alpha. So alpha is some real number, real number modulo integers of the integral of n minus 1 star j1. Okay. So I have lines. I also have like co-dimension 1 operators corresponding to alpha. And now if I look at 2 of these lines, alpha and beta, and I put them next to each other, we know that they are topological, so I can make them collide. Or become somehow make them really close to each other, and then they look like one line from far enough away. And this line turns out to be the line alpha plus beta. And in addition, there's the line corresponding to zero. And if I set in zero there, I just get the trivial defect, so the defect which doesn't do anything. Okay. This is exactly the fusion of U1, if you think of this as R mod integers. So the U1 symmetry we have leads to co-dimension 1. Co-dimension 1 just means their dimension is 1 less than n, so they are somehow, they're n minus 1 dimensional defects. So their codimension equals 1 defect with fusion implements the group structure. Okay, so there are these defects which fuse like U1. Essentially, if you have a U1 symmetry. And this generalizes to other settings. And then, because they implement the group structure, in particular, there's for every alpha, there's some alpha inverse so that they fuse to the trivial defect. And we just make this as a general definition. So we say a topological defect is invertible if there exists another defect, D inverse, such that so I take D and D inverse, I fuse them together, so I bring them close to each other, then they look like the trivial line, and the same is true for the other order. So it means that there is an inverse to D under this operation of fusing defects. And I mean, these type of things are the R1 example of those. Okay. And then I hope, okay, that's not part of the lecture. I hope that what we've seen so far at least motivates the following slogan or belief on what of a correspondence between symmetries in quantum field theory and invertible topological co-dimension one defects. So this is, let me call this a belief. Right, it can be made something like a theorem for TFTs. Is that symmetries are the same as invertible co-dimension one defects. So I already spent some time trying to explain how to go from a theory to a co-dimension one defect. Now let me mention how you can go the other way. If you have a co-dimension one defect and you want to figure out how it acts on something like an operator or a field, then what you can do is you can wrap this field with the co-dimension one defect. It's topological, so you can shrink it to a point. And then if we call this thing G, then this will implement the action of your symmetry G on the field. It's just some field or local operator. And then you can act on this with a topological defect by wrapping the operator. And if you want to figure out how to act on a Hilbert space, you can you can look at rho G, which is defined as Z on a cylinder with this defect inserted. So just some topological defect. And then I take the limit T goes to 0. So this has some length T. And I look at this limit where I send T to be 0. And this is what should implement the symmetry on the Hilbert space. So this is how you can figure out the action on Hilbert spaces. Here you can also figure out the action on local operators, and you can also similarly figure out the action on other extended objects. But if you want to figure out how it acts on a line operator, you can take the line and wrap it with a tube of the surface defect. Okay. And now, and the idea of generalized symmetries is just dropping various of these conditions. So a generalized, so they're what's called generalized symmetries. And they come in two flavors. One is what's called a higher form symmetries. These keep the invertibility condition, but get rid of the codimension one condition. So they are still invertible defects, but they are allowed to have higher codimensions. And then there's the other thing, which is called, which are non-invertible, invertible, or sometimes also categorical symmetries. And they correspond to giving up the invertibility condition for defects. Okay. Good. And now the, I mean, one problem one might have with this definition is somehow it's not really separating the symmetries and the quantum field theory. Somehow I need to know the quantum field theory and all its topological operators to figure out what the symmetry was. So how can I even make arguments which are independent of the concrete theory, which then hold in any setting which has the symmetry? So right, if I had, like in the example of quantum mechanics, I had the notion of a group, and I can prove things about a group. I can prove certain relations about elements in the group, and then they will hold in any theory with the symmetry. But here, somehow it seems, at least naively, in the way that somehow the to understand the symmetry, I also need to understand the theory it's realized in. And the idea of a symmetry TFT is actually to provide an abstract structure which replaces the group. And then there's a notion of a concrete realization. So from now on, we will make some simplifications. So we will assume everything is finite. So we assume all symmetries are finite. And this is also necessary to get a symmetry TQ of T. This is a necessary assumption for what I'm saying. And then we think have a group. This is somehow our abstract symmetry structure, and you might even also think about the group algebra, which is an algebra corresponding to that. This is abstract symmetry. But then there's also a concrete symmetry. So these are group representations, or over here they are G modules, CG. So they are modules over the algebra. Okay. And now I will somehow tell you the same. So these are concrete realizations of the symmetry structure. And I will tell you the same type of thing, but now in a slightly weird way, which then generalizes more towards field theory. So if I take any algebra A, this is a, so A is an algebra. And then A is also a right module over itself, where A acts on it from the right by multiplication, and this is called the regular right module. And then I somehow, instead of just recording the algebra, I actually record the pair of the algebra and its right module. So I say A, comma R is an abstract symmetry type. Okay. And now I can ask, what does it mean for this pair, A, R, to act on some vector space V? And this means that there's that we give a left A module, L, and an isomorphism, so I can take the right module, tensor it with the left module over the algebra A, and I want this to be isomorphic to V. And since this is the regular modulus, this tensor product just reduces to the underlying vector space. This is somehow a fancy way of saying the same thing as we said up there, but it generalizes nicely or better. So, and what you should think is that there's some 1D theory corresponding to A, and then it has a right boundary R and a left boundary L, and then this type of tensor product you should think of as being like a dimensional reduction along this interval, and this then is isomorphic to this dimensional reduction. We want to be isomorphic to V, and this isomorphism is data. And this is somehow the situation we find in 1D, and when generalizing to higher dimensions, one replaces algebras with what's called a symmetry DFT. So now we are at the place where we can give a definition of what an abstract symmetry structure is. This is definition from the paper by Fried, Moore, Telemann.
One question, yeah, look, just to clarify what the goal is right now. So is providing a definition to be able to define generalized symmetries?
Right, you can define generalized symmetries in terms of topological non-invertible operators.
Yeah.
Right? What we want is somehow something like a group. We want something we can argue abstractly in and draw conclusions which then hold in any theory which has a symmetry. So you want an abstract symmetry structure and then a way of concretely realizing it in a quantum field theory.
So what does it mean to concretely realizing? Having these families of topological operators?
I have not told you what it means. I have not even told you what the abstract symmetry structure is. But I mean, you know what a group is, and then you can ask, are there co-dimensional one operators which fuse like the group? That would mean something like realizing the group. But, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So are you trying to give a sharper definition of what that means? I thought, or...
No, what I'm trying to do is even... what is the abstract structure you can ask to realize in general?
Okay. So and even for the group itself, we have not defined it.
Even for the group, it's not really clear what I by now know. But at least there, for group, there's an abstract structure, which is just a group. Here, there's somehow, so far, there's not really an abstract structure, which is independent of the field theory. And there are two approaches. One is the one I'm presenting. The other one is just try to figure out what is the category of topological lines or defects. And this will then also be an abstract thing which encodes the symmetry.
Okay, because it's not simply some sort of representation of the group. It's more complicated because these defects can
interact
in different ways and like
yes.
Wrap things.
And there's also some type of locality, so you want these things to be compatible.
Okay.
Maybe. If it's not clear in like 15 minutes or so, ask again. But I'm trying to set this up, like give you an abstract symmetry structure.
Okay.
And this is now their definition. So they define what they call an n-dimensional quiche. So that's a type of food. I will explain in a moment why they call it a quiche. But what it is a pair sigma and rho. And the pair consists of an n plus one dimensional TQFT, so where sigma is and n plus 1 dTQFT and rho is a topological boundary condition, and let's say right. So it sits, the theory sits on the right of the boundary. So the picture to have in mind is the following. there are some topological boundary condition, which is sigma, and then there's n plus one dimensional bulk theory. Right, and the boundary is rho, the bulk is sigma. And why is this a quiche? I mean, a quiche is somehow solid on one side and open on the other side. Right. I don't know. Not my definition. I think that's their justification, right? A quiche, something like this. And then it's filled with stuff. But there's nothing on top. Right? What? Yeah, but it's like there's no crust on top. So there's only crust on one side. And then if you put something here, you will get something which looks like a sandwich. So that's why it's called, you can take a quiche and you make a sandwich out of it. That's the next thing. And this somehow will encode the abstract symmetry structure. And why is it good? Or why is something like this useful? It's because we have a good definition of what a TQFT is and what boundaries for those are. So you can, like something you can, where you include these things in your Bordism category. So your Bordisms are allowed to have these red boundaries, and then you need to evaluate on these type of things. So there's some, so for example, if I have in a 1D theory, I would now be able to compute a partition function for something like this. And this would now just be a number and not a state. Or if the theory is 2D, I would get a state space for this. And then I could look at a Bordism. So I have a circle here, and then I could look at a Bordism like this, where there's some boundary things happening there. Okay, not a good drawing, but hope you get the idea. And these, you should be able to evaluate things on these type of Bordisms. But I mean, the nice thing is that these things are mathematically sound, that there's a lot of knowledge how to handle them and how to study them and how to build examples. So we can somehow concretely study them, even though QFTs are usually hard to access from a mathematical point. These symmetry TFTs are somehow things we can handle. And then you can use them to still draw useful conclusions about general QFTs.
Oh, and following up on the question just made up. No, so it seemed like you said, when you say it's a boundary now, it's like a function that now allows the cobordisms might have boundaries now.
Yes.
On top of, well,
on top of these cutting and gluing boundaries we had before, yes.
Exactly. What makes it a right boundary?
It's the theory is on the right of the boundary. you see, this is the theory is on the right. This is on. I mean, yeah, it's, you're right. Speaking about the right only makes sense when you have an orientation.
So in the pant example you had, what makes it on the left? It seems like it's on the left for some reason.
What is on the left?
The pant you had with a cut. I'm just saying what makes it on the left or on the right. That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, essentially in 1D, right, I have this. And then this line has an orientation, so it can point into the out of the boundary. Or it can point into the boundary. And so if I fix the orientation of the blackboard, or this type of orientation, so I say left to right, then there are somehow two ways the orientation can look near the boundary. It either points out of it, then this would be a right boundary, or it points into the boundary, then it would be a left boundary.
That generalizes to all.
That generalizes to higher dimensions, yes.
So only, okay, so only a boundary with a specific orientation would have a...
Yeah, so... Exactly. You would only be allowed to place rho here.
Yeah.
This would not be allowed.
Yeah.
But then there's something else you can place there usually. So you can place like some dual to rho there, like an orientation reversal of rho. But
like morphism between the empty guy and
the yes, exactly.
Minus, but don't get the one with plus.
Yes. Yes, but then there will also be somehow a dual boundary condition, which where you reverse all the orientations. But okay. So we have our abstract symmetry structure, and now we can ask, what is the concrete realization of it? And we say, so for a given quiche, a sigma rho module is okay. A module structure on now an arbitrary QFT Z. So this is a now not topological, just a left boundary condition. Condition Z tilde and and an isomorphism. So I take rho tensor with sigma Z tilde, and I want this to be isomorphic via theta to Z. And this picture really means we take our setting where we have rho here. Then we put sigma in the bulk and F, Z tilde here. And now we have this type of sandwich. And we can dimensionally reduce that to get just an n-dimensional field theory. And then we want this to be isomorphic to Z via theta. And this is what it means to have a realization of a symmetry in a given quantum field theory. And somehow a group has concrete elements. These are things we can work with and prove relations for. What will replace these elements are operators in the spike boundary system. So there are some operators which might be confined to the boundary, and then there are some operators confined to the bulk. And you should think of these as the elements of a group, or like whatever the version of a group is. This is somehow the thing you want to prove relations about. So if you know certain relations about the operators in the setting, they will give you certain relations in the quantum field theory. Okay. Questions? If not,
yeah. No, so I still don't. So what's the abstract structure that then we have provided, and how does it relate to this? Because I didn't understand what this was in the first place.
What was?
This middle blackboard.
Okay. How you should think about is sigma, which is the n plus one dimensional TQFT.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the algebra A is here. And then there's this regular right module. This is what the topological boundary condition is. And then you can ask, how can I use this pair to say what it means for A to act on a vector space V? This is by giving some left module for A and an isomorphism between this tensor product to V. And this is exactly the sandwich type construction.
Why would I even want a notion of A acting on V? What is it, A?
A is some algebra, right? Something like the group algebra. And you might want to ask if the group acts as symmetries on some vector space.
Fair. And
now I just taught you a complicated way of saying what this means. But this complicated way has the advantage that it somehow has this higher dimensional generalization in terms of TQFTs.
OK, so that's the generalization of the left?
The left is a special case of this.
Okay, so here you're simply defining there's some module that's okay defined by vector space and the symmetry.
Yeah, so module you should think of as me being a boundary condition.
Yeah.
And an algebra you should think of as a field theory. So this is the A, this is the R.
Yeah. And
And then the thing you act on, this is Z. And you want to act on Z, and you give some Z tilde, which is on the left boundary, and then you want the sandwich to be Z.
So the vector, the module R is not the vector, but rather there's this funny thing.
No, I mean, I'm really struggling to understand the difference between V and L.
I mean, V, L is V, essentially, right?
Yes, but what's like then? Is that
here? But here it's not going to be true anymore that Z tilde will be Z, right? As a QFT also. But a Z tilde is not even defined as a QFT, it's only defined as a boundary. So I mean, here, if you, and also it's because R is chosen to be the regular, right, module. I mean, maybe just ignore this. I thought this is a good motivation for this, but I mean, these are the definitions and the other thing, it might not be.
But then what's going on the right? So we have a, you have a Z tilde?
Yes.
You have a row was the boundary thing? Okay, row is the boundary thing.
So there's this quiche, which is this thing, and this is an abstract symmetry type. And now I asked,
abstract symmetry type.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like a group.
Okay.
Think of it as like a generalization of the notion of a group.
Okay.
And then you can ask, does the given field theory Z has a symmetry described by this quiche? And what does it mean to have a symmetry described by the quiche is that the quiche has some boundary condition Z tilde, such when I compute the sandwich with rho, I get Z.
Quiche has a boundary condition Z tilde, because quiche has boundary conditions. Like, because
I mean, sigma can have boundary conditions.
Yeah, right? With rho.
Yeah, but it can also have another boundary condition on the another left boundary condition, which might now also not be topological. So Z tilde might be a non-topological.
Rho is topological, okay.
Yeah, rho is required to be topological.
What's the tensor product over a functor?
I mean, this tensor product is just take this picture and do the dimensional reduction. Right, this part is topological, so you can just dimensionally reduce the field theories to get a, right, you can take the sandwich and think of it as like an n-dimensional field theory. By doing like the dimensional reduction along this interval.
So like,
and this is what this symbol means. Just do this dimensional reduction.
So in the picture above from U1, I can think I have like this dimension one defect.
Yes.
Like a U1 stretching like in the orthogonal direction, but then I have like some
physics
you want.
Yeah, something like that. There we will also now do two examples. In particular, we will try to recover ordinary group symmetries of quantum.
No, and can you repeat, what was the image we were describing?
The look at this line defect on top.
Yeah, which one, the pink one or the thing with the...
The pink one.
Okay.
Anyway, the big one, and I think of like U1 stretching in the other direction, and then you sort of have a module for U1, and it brings it down.
Are U1 stretching in what direction? Along it? Like, is it like a...
No. Like if, or talking about the blackboard.
I think I will draw a picture like that in a bit. I'm not sure if it's exactly what you're describing, but it should go in this direction.
Fair enough. Okay, yeah. So in this case, Z is not topological, but somehow you mount some other topological theory with a topological boundary.
Yes.
And
I should highlight that we don't really mathematically understand non-topological field theory. So anything we can play back to something topological, we like, because there we can actually argue and prove statements. And I mean, so far, based on what we did in the course, the only UFTs we know in any dimension are Digraph-Witten theories, or maybe they're general relations. So we want to figure out what are boundary conditions. For Dijkgraaf Witten series. And that start with so-called semi-classical ones. So these are boundary conditions which have a geometric origin. Remember that Dijkgraaf-Witten theory was based on this classifying space for a group noun, and then to describe a boundary condition, need to give you some other space, X, which we assume to be pi finite, or which needs to be pi finite for certain things to converge. And then I give you a map F here. And then, so what we want to do is now if we want to evaluate this Dijkgraaf-Witten theory on a boundary described by this pair. So we have some bike M. And then there's some boundary sigma, which is which somehow corresponds to this pair x comma f. And I want to compute a partition function in this setting. And this is defined as, I mean, Dijkgraaf-Witten theory was an integral of the constant function over a given groupoid. And now here we also integrate over a groupoid, which is called y. And it's built as follows. So what was in the ordinary Dijkgraaf-Witten setting is that I look at maps from M to BG. These are principal bundles, and then I integrate over the fundamental groupoid of the space. But now I can also, since I have a boundary, I can look at the functor which restricts to the boundary sigma. Then I have maps from sigma into BG. Can also look at the maps from sigma into X. I can look at maps sigma into X, and I have F star, which is the push forward or post composition with this map F. And then I can form this pullback. And this is what I call Y. So this is the fundamental groupoid of Y. This is what we integrate over. So it's somehow it integrates over a bundle on M, some map from the boundary to X so that the bundle restricts to this map in the boundary. And this is the space Y.
Sorry, but what was X again in relation to sigma?
X is just some other space which comes with a map to BG.
Okay.
This is like what describes the boundary condition. Somehow if I have this data, I can build a boundary condition from it.
Okay. Yes, fair enough.
And I'm trying to tell you how to build the boundary condition by doing like a finite type path integral over a certain space of fields. And it's the space of fields, which is this pullback here. And I mean, the important example, okay, let me just mention what you do if there's a co-cycle around, in case you are interested. Right, so there was also a co-cycle omega. And then the condition is that to make this the boundary compatible, that you need some theta here, which is not a co-cycle, but d of it is required to be f star of omega. And then what you can do is you can insert omega times theta into the integral. And then you get this for a non-trivial co-cycle.
BG is what again?
It's the classifying space for the group G here. It's not the thing that was up there, yeah. Might be. So it's like the realization of the thing up there. But it's now the space. And so this is what the partition function is. And now we might also ask, what is the state space in the presence of this boundary? So I have now some codimension one manifold, which is allowed to have boundaries which are labeled with this blue pair. So this is sigma, and then this boundary here, let's call it S. And what this is just a functions now on the same Y, but for the pair sigma comma S. So I look at bundles on sigma, which and maps from S to X, so that they agree. I should probably say what's the most important example of this is just so it's just the map from a point to BG. So then the sum restricts to bundles on M, which are trivial on the boundary, because the point, right, there's only one map to the point, and then the condition becomes that it's trivial. So this is what you, so we fix the value of the field on the boundary. So this is what usually is called, so this is what we call the Dirichlet. The Dirichlet boundary. Condition. And this is also what our quiche will be. So the quiche will be, that's not what we are doing. Anyway, the quiche later on will be the Dyckhoff-Witten theory and then plus this Dirichlet boundary condition, which is the one corresponding to this map. Okay, but these are somehow boundary conditions which we build by quantizing something classical. There also might be other boundary conditions. So we are now interested in just some general boundary condition. And it sits on the other side. So I don't want to be careful what is left and right. So what we will do is we just, for every groupoid, so if I have essentially finite groupoid G, then I make the functions on G with values in C. We consider, so we make this a Hilbert space. It's a Hilbert space. Space with pairing. So I have two functions, F and H, which are functions from G to C, and then we just write down the usual L2 pairing. So G, so we integrate over the elements in the groupoid, we take F of G bar H of G. And recall that this was defined as some finite sum. And the main reason for this is now, since I have a Hilbert space structure, if I have a map going the wrong way, I can always consider its adjoint going the other way. So it can be a bit sloppy in what direction maps go. And what we want to understand are now just general boundary conditions, not those which arise from something classical. Thing we want to understand is now, for example, what happens on something like this, where I have a left boundary condition, which is now also allowed to depend on some other geometric structure. So this might be a non-topological boundary condition. And we asked what type of thing is this? And by evaluating on a picture like this, I can think of it as a borderism from the empty set to sigma, so it needs to be a map from C, which is my field theory on the empty set, to the state space of Dyckhoff-Witten theory on sigma. Okay. And we should think of this as one. Okay, so this boundary condition is what we call F tilde. And it maps one to the partition function of f tilde. So this is, I mean, generally this will just be some map, which I now call the partition function of z of f tilde, which is a map from g bundles on sigma to c. We call that this, like a, this space is just the space of functions on bund g, sigma with values in c. So boundary condition just picks out a specific function. And I think of this as my partition function for the theory f tilde, which now depends on g bundles. Okay. And then you see that this somehow means, similarly, f tilde is actually a theory which is defined in the background of g, in the presence of g background fields. And this generalizes to something like a theorem, which says a boundary conditions for Dijkgraaf-Witten theory are the same, so are equivalent to giving field theories or giving QFTs. Coupled or defined in the presence of G gauge fields. Right? Because if I have a boundary theory, right, it might depend on some more structure on sigma, but this type of evaluation will always add a dependence on a G gauge field. And I mean, it's a theorem in quotations because this is not like a well-defined thing to begin with. Yeah. And then there's a, something like a proposition based on this. Is now I can look. Right, I have this pair, so I can look at this, what I get if I take the Dirichlet boundary condition and take the center with the Dijkgraaf-Witten theory for some f tilde. And the statement is that this is f, where f is the restriction. Restriction of f tilde to a trivial gauge fields. So in this way, having looking at this key story for Dijkgraaf-Witten theory with a Dirichlet boundary condition, we actually recover the usual story of theories in the presence of some background gauge fields. There's a proof. What?
Why trivial?
What, sorry?
To trivial gauge fields.
I mean, right, f tilde depends on some g bundles.
Oh.
And you just fix it to be the trivial one. So you only, you forget that it depends on other things. You just remember that it depends on the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's actually a proof of this in the notes. I think I will skip this. It's also a nice exercise if you want something to try to work out. Okay, and then a consequence is that at least quantum mechanics with a finite group symmetry now fits into this framework. So this is like short just corollary of what we've seen, which says 1D quantum mechanics with G symmetry is a the digraph written, and then this boundary, this Dirichlet boundary condition module. Okay. Now, so far I have just shown you how this formulism somehow reproduces things you already know. And now I want to at least give you some idea on why it's useful. Okay, we're actually good on time, that's nice. So what happens, right, we have to see what the colors are. So the setting we are in is there's this topological boundary, there's a physical boundary, and then there's some another topological field theory in between. And what I can now do is I can look at topological operators in the bulk, which might end somewhere here. So I can look at things like this. And then if I do the sandwich construction, this will just give me some operator in the original theory, which depends on like things here. So what this means is, somehow if I have, for example, a topological operator in the boundary, and I do this construction, it gives me an operator in the original theory, but this operator is now manifestly topological because it was topological here. So I can move it around here, so it will be topological in the quantum field theory. And we want to figure out what are these operators, at least for 2D digraph written theory. So we have, somehow we want to figure out what are topological point operators. And there are two different types of operators we can look. We can either look at some which sit in the bulk or at the boundary. Let's first look at one in the bulk. Then we can cut out a small disk around this and evaluate the field theory on this disk, and then we get some state in whatever digraph-written theory assigns to a circle. And this is then what's usually called the operator state correspondence. So O is also the same as some element in whatever the vector space for digraph-written theory on a circle is. And we have seen this is just the center of the group algebra. So in particular, if you have an element in the group which lies in the center, this gives you an operator in the bulk. So there are a bunch of operators in the bulk which are labeled by elements in the center. And now if I have an operator in the boundary, so I have some O prime which lives in the boundary, then I can do the same and cut out a disk around here. But now I don't get a circle, but what I get is the digraph-written theory in the presence for this interval type picture here with two boundary conditions. And these are both Dirichlet boundary conditions. So recall this was like functions on this Y space with values in C. So these are bundles on the interval which are trivial on the boundary, and gauge transformations which are compatible with this. These are just functions on G, because they are such like this is completely determined by what this map is. So this is just the group algebra as a vector space. And so O prime lives in here. So the conclusion is that I have maybe anyways. So in this quantum mechanics setting, or whenever I have a digraph-written theory and I have something on the boundary, then I have some point operators here, which are labeled by G, and they are topological, so I can move them up and down. And then if I have two of them, G and H, I can fuse them together, so I can make them collide. But then there are also other operators which correspond to the center, which are element in the center, which actually live here. So these are like, I don't know, these, which live in the center of the group. And I can, now these, I can commute with the H just because I can move the operators around, they're topological. And these type of reasonings generalize to higher dimensions. So for the same reason, for example, you will find codimension one element in the boundary labeled by group elements. Okay. And now you also might ask what happens if I fuse two of these lines? What will happen there is that the fusion is bringing them closely together, and this is something one can evaluate in the field theory corresponding to, like, in the keys encoding the symmetry. So the fusion of defects on the boundary, it's the same as evaluating Dijkgraaf-Witten theory on this type of quadrism. And then in this case, this is just a map from CG, tensor CG to CG, which is the group multiplication. But now if you include the cocycle omega in the Dijkgraaf-Witten theory, then here you would see the cocycle omega showing up, meaning that these operators here, they actually fused in the way it would happen for an anomalous symmetry. Okay. So and then the general story in 1D is, so you can have other field theories than Dijkgraaf-Witten theory. So there's some bulk, which is usually labeled by an algebra. And then there's a topological boundary condition, which is labeled by some module over R. And the things in the bound, or like, which is labeled, let's say, by the algebra, seen as a right module over itself. And then element operators living on the boundary are elements in the algebra. Operators living in the bulk will be elements of its center. Okay, there's one last thing I want to say, is we've seen last time, we have somehow also seen that there are versions of Dijkgraaf-Witten theories for other spaces X. And so if I run the story, I can look at this with base point. This will give me some keys, and this encodes what's known as higher form symmetries. And let's just do one easy example. So we take X to be a twofold delooping of some abelian group. And then I can ask now in one dimension higher. I can ask what are the lines supported on the boundary. So I want to ask what is the line supported here. And I can again do this by cutting out a neighborhood of it. So lines supported, they are the same as whatever the theory will assign to. Now the thing I cut out. But then there's also the line, which should be a circle, so it's a closed loop. So I will get this times sum as 1. So I need to figure out what the theory assigns to a space like this. And what it does, right, it maps from this space, which are trivial at these two endpoints. So it's a map from S1 times an interval, but then I require both the endpoints to be sent to a base point. And so this is just functions on the double loop space of BA with values in C. So this is, I do at BA squared, so they cancel. This is just the group algebra on A. So I have, in conclusion, there are codimension 2 defects labeled with the elements of the group A. So these are the defects encoding this higher form symmetry. And then the exercise is to figure out what's happening in the bulk. So what are line defects in the bulk, and also what are point defects. And if you want, you can also look at more complicated defect configurations, but then you can see what type of computations and relations these hold. That's fine. This is something which will hold in any theory you have a higher form symmetry. Okay, let me stop here and ask for questions.
So yeah, so just to clarify what happened here, so you wanted to define a symmetry acting or something like a topological operator on a QFT, on an arbitrary QFT, and to that you invoked, for that you invoked digraph Wood theory.
I mean, this is an example, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only example we did in general dimension in the course. So it's,
we did what?
It's like the only example we did so far, digraph Wooden series.
Yes.
But they also somehow, they were what corresponds to like group symmetries or finite group symmetries. But then more exotic TQFTs will correspond to more exotic field theories.
To more exotic?
Symmetries. Symmetries, yes.
And again, and the thing that makes the symmetry, when you do the dimensionalized reduction, well, what happens is these points, these point defects get collapsed to a point. And
yeah, so if you have a point defect here and you do this dimensional reduction, it will give you a point defect here.
Yeah.
I should have also changed this side. Okay. So here now there's like some G, some H, and some Z. And from here you see the Z, you can move past the G and the H, and the G and H you can collide, but you cannot move them past each other. There's just no room for that.
Fair enough. And this part I didn't understand. What was the part about cutting out a circle around the point on this right-hand side?
Here?
Yeah.
So we try to figure out what are the operators in this TQFT.
And for this one specifically?
Yeah, like what are the specific operators I can insert here?
Okay.
Topological ones. And you can do that by cutting out a circle, right? And then you have this thing with it sitting in O, and you can evaluate your field theory on this.
Okay.
And this will give you an element in whatever the theory assigns to the boundary. And this is actually an equivalence between elements in this boundary space and the operators O. So it's something you might know from a CFT, this is like the operator state correspondence.
Yeah, but so what are you invoking there? Like, because exactly. Because I don't know what it means to have an operator inserted for a TQFT in this case.
I mean, I just means that it's defined for on manifolds which have like this thing with a label on them.
Okay, some sort of label in there.
Yeah, but then I'm telling you, it's the same as giving just a boundary in the, like giving a state in this boundary thing.
Okay.
Boundary Hilbert space.
Okay.
And then the only difference is you might also look at operators confined to the boundary. And then this neighborhood looks differently, so the operator state correspondence gives you a different answer.
Okay. And this is simply to classify the kinds of local operators we have in each?
Yeah. Because they will give us some operator, right? If I understand the local operators in the quiche, I figure out what type of operators I have in the QFT. And I said, like, these topological operators, you should think of them as the elements in your group. Right. And in this example, they are literally the elements in the group, or in the case of the bike, the elements of the